like it's a Republican Speaker of the House. All right, power panel. Cenk Uygur, Jordan Yule, Trey Crowder. Trey, of course, comes on here from time to time. He's a writer, comedian, but he's also the host of the Weekly Skews podcast. You guys are all checking that out. You know that. You know, and Jordan's a bit of an insurgent, so it makes sense that he's got the Insurgents podcast. So we got a great show ahead for you guys today. Donald Trump is in a lot of trouble, and as usual, due to his own making in a lot of ways, of course, right? And but the Republicans are trying to shovel him money as in every way that they can. But I have a slight defense of Donald Trump in that case. Fun and interesting for everyone. All right, stay around, a lot of interesting stories. Jordan, take it away.
Former President Donald Trump said this morning that he has almost enough money to post bond, undercutting his lawyer's claims that he would not be able to comply with the $464 million judgment against him in the civil fraud case brought by New York Attorney General Letitia James. He has until Monday to post the bond before James can start seizing his assets, and apparently she's already on the move. But he wrote on Truth Social early this morning, "Through hard work, talent, and luck, I currently have almost $500 million in cash, a substantial amount of which I intended to use in my campaign for president. The often overturned political hack judge on the rigged and corrupt AG case, where I have done nothing wrong, knew this, wanted to take it from me, and that's where and why he came up with the shocking number, which, coupled with his crazy interest demand, is approximately $454 million. That's all one sentence. I did nothing wrong except win an election in 2016 that I wasn't expected to win, did even better in 2020, and now lead by a lot in 2024. This is communism in America." In another post, he described the judgment as so unconstitutional and said, "Judge Arthur Engoron came up with a crazy, out of thin air award in order to damage me politically and not allow me to use any of the large amount of cash I have built up over the years. Through hard work, insight, instinct, and diligence on my political campaign for president." His lawyers have previously said in a court filing on Monday that he was unable to secure a bond, despite the fact that at a deposition last year, Trump said he had substantially in excess of $400 million in cash. And he's likely about to become much, much richer after it was announced today that his company, Trump Media, would be taken public. Shareholders voted to approve Trump Media's merger with a blank check company following years of legal and regulatory obstacles. Trump will own a dominant stake in a public company with shares worth more than $3 billion at current market prices. But that doesn't mean much with regard to the bond, because he won't be able to monetize his stake right away. Trump's stake will be tied up for much of the year under a so-called lockup agreement, a normal arrangement for such deals to ensure that insiders don't bail as soon as a company goes public and push down the stock price. There's more to this story, but I want to bring you both in. Cenk, what do you make of this? Do you believe him when he says he has the money for it?
Well, I hope it's true. Then this whole thing's solved. As usual, Donald Trump punches himself in the face. So I'm gonna come back to that in a second. I'm gonna come back to, I have the answer for how to solve all this. So rest assured, everybody, take a deep breath. And then my favorite part is the Trump Media asset that he's now theoretically has over $3 billion. I love that, sir. Okay, so one thing at a time. Number one, you remember back in 2016, Donald Trump claimed that he had $10 billion. Then in 2021, he legally said that he has $4.5 billion. And so if he really has $4.5 billion, you might still have some difficulty getting $500 million in cash, because a lot of people have it locked up in stocks or real estate, et cetera, that's harder to get out. But if you have $4.5 billion, you probably have $500,000 in cash, as Trump is saying now. But I'd like to make a couple of notes about that. Number one, if you have it, then why are we having this conversation? The law is you're supposed to give it over, and you just said you have it. He's so dumb, he just can't help himself. Why would you say, as you're begging everyone, and your lawyer said on TV that you might even be asking foreign governments for the money? You have right-wing media begging right-wing billionaires for the money. Why would you say you have it then? You're in court saying you don't have it, and then you publicly say that you do have it. It's Donald Trump's lack of intelligence is immeasurable. He's like negative IQ. And why? Because he can't help himself. He wants to, his whole thing is self-puffery. I'm so rich, I have so much money. And that's the stupid game he's been playing this whole time. Can I ask you guys, if you guys are diehard MAGA and you think, oh, jank boo, Trump's right about everything, he's such a demigod of truth and honesty. Wait a minute, and he's such an awesome businessman. Let's just think this through, because if Trump is right, and you guys are right, that he always tells the truth, he had $10 billion in 2016, $4.5 billion in 2021. How did this awesome businessman lose $5.5 billion in 5 years? Come on, guys. Anybody who doesn't think Donald Trump is a hilarious liar is so detached from reality, they're hopeless. We just have to talk to the sane people in this world to get to objective reality here. Of course, he doesn't have that kind of money, and of course, he doesn't have the cash. I don't know what he's gonna do here, but I do have what should happen. And right now, this is pretty much in the process of happening. I think that forcing him to sell all the properties now is too draconian. I don't think it's the right thing to do. On the other hand, I think putting liens on the properties, meaning, hey, if you lose the appeal and you go all the way through and you've lost the case, then at least we can seize your properties then. We have the legal right to seize your properties then. That's fair, because he's got to put up the collateral so that we know he can pay this, but without bankrupting him now by making him sell his properties. I'm curious what you guys think about that. Actually, let's talk about that, and then I'll save what I think of Trump media in a second, because that is also hilarious, okay? But Trey, what do you think about his claims and what should happen to him in that case?
Well, first of all, I just think it's fun. I think all the time about what it must be like to be one of Donald Trump's lawyers. You know what I mean? Because presumably these people like do their level best and try to be all, you know, stick to the law and present these like seemingly legitimate and legal reasons why we can't comply with that request. And then later that night, Trump, while on the toilet, gets on Truth Social and is like, just so everybody knows, I can totally comply with this request. I'm just not going to, because the judge is a hack and an idiot. And I just want to put that out there. And you know, the lawyer's going to be sitting there like, Jesus Christ, like it's got to be. So plus you don't get paid and could end up in jail yourself. So not an enviable job, I think. And also, I like this story because it does cut right to the heart of his whole like persona. He is like, you know, a Scrooge McDuck type rich person, or wants everybody to think he is. Like he's a cartoon version of a rich man. And that's how he identifies, and it's very important to him. So like something that hits him in his wallet and makes him appear to not have as much money as, you know, he says he does, I do enjoy. I get a lot of schadenfreude from that. And you know, anything that leads to like headlines about Trump being broke, I'm all for it. I do kind of bristle at that because I come from a long line of broke people. Like I'm from old no money, right? And it's like he's not broke. Like I don't know when's the last time he had to choose between new tires and a fan belt, or like, you know, live off of ramen noodles and beanie weenies. Like he's not broke. He's rich people broke, which is different. Rich people, when they're broke, they can keep playing golf somehow. I don't get how all that works, but. But yeah, I know it's got to be tough for his ego, which is why he can't help but say, no, I totally have it. Because, you know, when he says he's like, I'm the billionest billionaire that ever billioned. You can't admit to not having half of only 1 billion. You know, you have to pretend you have it. But like you guys said, like, if he did, then where is it? What's going on? Why isn't he, you know, coming forward? Why isn't he actually producing it? So no, I don't think he has it. As far as what should happen, you're a far smarter man than me, Jank. So I'm just going to defer to your expertise. That what'd you call it? Lanes? Yeah, lanes. That sounds good. I think we should do that. I'm with you.
I don't agree that I'm smarter than you, but I hear what you're saying about the legal options, Jordan.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we talked about the assets earlier, and the deadline to post his bond is on Monday, at which point Letitia James can start claiming assets. According to CNN, she is already on the move. The New York Attorney General's office has filed judgments in Westchester County, the first indication that the state is preparing to try to seize Donald Trump's golf course and private estate north of Manhattan, known as Seven Springs. That doesn't necessarily mean that seizures of the Westchester properties are imminent, but judgments are the initial step James needs to take take if she plans to seize them in the future. Judgment has already entered in New York City, where Trump's properties, including Trump Tower, his penthouse at Trump Tower, 40 Wall Street, his hotel abutting Central Park, and numerous apartment buildings are located. Judgments have not been entered yet in Florida, where Mar-a-Lago is located, but some, including Republican pollster and Trump critic Frank Luntz, think Letitia James seizing his properties is a terrible idea. Take a look.
If the New York Attorney General starts to take his homes away, starts to seize his assets, it's all going to be on camera. Pundits are going to sit there and scream about this. This man cannot be elected. You're going to create the greatest victimhood of 2024, and you're going to elect Donald Trump. If they take his stuff, he's going to say that this is proof that the federal government and the establishment and the swamp in Washington and all the politicians across the country and the attorneys generals and all of this, that this is a conspiracy to deny him the presidency. He's going to go up in the polls just like he went up every single time they indicted him. I don't understand. I'm almost speechless in how pathetic the opposition to Trump has been and how completely misguided. And this is a perfect example of it.
So, Cenk, is Frank Luntz right here?
Republican pollster, they're probably the top pollster on their side in my lifetime. But he does not like Donald Trump and does not want him to win. So, with that caveat. I've been stunned by how pathetic Trump's opposition is all of this time. I mean, they're so, so bad at running against him, so bad at holding him accountable. And part of the reason for that I could explain, which is that the Democratic leadership has such an establishment mindset that they cannot relate to the average guy. So they can't see what the average guy was gonna get mad about. And number one thing is that they don't get that the average guy's mad about them, right? And so they keep going in the wrong direction. So, okay, but how does that play into this? Well, if you put liens on his properties, as I'm suggesting, you're not actually taking them and selling them now, which has much worse optics. But you have the ability to sell them if he loses the appeal. That is both more fair and will have better optics. But knowing, you know, how Democratic establishment groupthink is, and Letitia James is roughly part of that groupthink, and she's being encouraged by other pundits on cable news and other politicians in the Democratic Party, they kind of want that schadenfreude that Trey was talking about. So they want to see his houses taken away. But then he's going to get to say, look at the communists taking my property. The case isn't even over yet. Yeah, I lost the first round, but I have appeals coming up. And that's going to resonate with people. And if you sell his properties now, they're going to be sold in a fire sale. So something that could have gotten $150 million maybe gets, you know, $85 million. Well, that money's gone then. The difference, let's say it was round numbers, could have gone for $150, went for $100. That $50 million, the state can't recover, Trump can't recover, it's gone. So I think it's a really bad idea to sell the properties, both politically and in terms of policy as well. So regrettably, I think Luntz is right. And the Democrats just can't see straight. Anything that attacks Trump, they think is good. But that's not necessarily the case. You have to actually be smarter about how the politics of this plays out. So I do want to go back to the thing that I promised about Trump media. Guys, they say the company now that it looks like it's going to go forward. I mean, it's perfect that he made a deal with a blank check company. That's exactly the kind of deal that Trump would want to make. That the company itself is going to be worth $6 billion. And that Trump owns 58% of it. That's why he's going to have over $3 billion. That is very unlikely, but there is a narrow window where it is possible. So the stock is hilariously overvalued. I mean, I've never seen a stock more overvalued in my life. This thing's worth $6 billion. It has one asset right now, True Social. Do you know what True Social did in the third quarter of this year or of last year? So that's a quarter of the year. They made $1.1 million in revenue. And that company's worth $6 billion? Hilarious. Hold on. It gets way worse. That's revenue. How about profits? I mean, if you made 1.1 million, you probably don't have that much profits, right? No, way worse. They lost $26 million in one quarter. So he's on pace to lose, you know, over 80 million for the year. And that company's worth $6 billion? No, I want to explain to you guys, and especially if you're MAGA, if you're ever going to listen to me on anything, this should be it. It's a sucker's play. So they want to introduce it publicly, have all you guys buy the stock, have it be super overinflated, and within 6 months, management and perhaps including Donald Trump and the shareholders can start selling their stock. So they'll sell their stock like crazy and it'll crater. It's not worth anything. It's run by Donald Trump, one of the dumbest people in America. He's gone bankrupt 6 different times. He's almost never succeeded in any business he's ever run. And it's already losing about 80 million a year with no hope of ever turning it around. So he's not, the only way he gets any of that money is if they could just hold on for 6 months while MAGA suckers buy the stock and no one else. Then the rest of the market will short the crap out of it. It'll collapse so quick and so overwhelmingly. Okay, this is the type of thing that I would bet any money on. Okay, that the chance of that company's survival and turning a profit is zero. It's not near zero, it's zero. So let's see if I'm right or wrong. We'll see. That's the beauty of all this, guys. So Trump says he's got the $500 million. Well, he has to put up the bond on Monday. So we'll find out, won't we? And you'll get to see with your own eyes. And if 10 years from now, you know, Trump media is still running strong and Trump's got billions of dollars from it and he didn't sell the stock, he just owns it and it's doing great, then okay, then you come back and say, ha ha, Jake, you didn't know anything about business and Trump did. But you'll see. All right, any other thoughts, guys?
Yeah, the Trump media thing, I had been wondering what their next like grift was going to be to like financially exploit his, you know, his base or whatever. And my money had been on commemorative plates. I thought that was a play they were going to make at some point. You know what I mean? Put Trump's face on a plate like Dale Earnhardt style. Real big in the trailer park. I thought it could have been onto something. But you know, this stock, it also, you know, that works too, I guess. But I mean, obviously, you're right. The idea that Truth Social is apparently worth $6 billion. I mean, all this stuff, Wall Street valuations are always, they seem like, you know, like Hogwartsian to me anyway, and rarely ever make any sense. But especially this, yeah, I don't know where they're getting that from. But you know, people are gonna line up to buy it. It's definitely gonna happen. You know, ain't no grift like a Trump grift, baby. But as far as the lunch thing, I don't know. When I hear people say like, to me, that sounds like them saying he shouldn't face the typical consequences because it will be helpful to him because he'll complain about it. And I'm listening like, so does that mean he's just supposed to get away with everything because of, you know, who he is and how dumb his fans are, because it'll be interpreted as like the government coming after him and it might help him out. That means that what? He should just be allowed to keep things that anyone else in his position wouldn't be able to keep? I don't know. I'm too law dumb to really speculate on it. But yeah, and the last thing on the stock, I do think it's kind of appropriate that artificially inflating the value of something is, you know, he's right back to doing that again. It's like, that's how we got here in the first place. So time is a flat circle. What are you going to do?
There's, you know, there's one thing I want to add about the Truth Social merger. Citizens for Ethics and Responsibility in Washington, otherwise known as CREW, they pointed out earlier that the SPAC that's merging with True Social is Susquehanna International Group LLP, which was co-founded by GOP mega donor Jeffrey Yass. Some people might know that name as helping try to shape the outcome of different elections in Pennsylvania. And right now, he is supporting a super PAC that is trying to stop Summer Lee in her primary. This is the same guy who is spending big to try to stop Summer Lee in the Democratic primary. So when we talk about money in politics, we talk about how these people have influence. This is somebody who's partnering with Trump on Truth Social and simultaneously trying to support a moderate Democrat in the primary. So a perfect example and yet another example of why we need to get big money out of politics.
Okay, last couple of things then. First of all, the lien on the property solves the issue that Trey has legitimately. So you don't want to have different rules for Trump in either direction where he's above the law or below the law. So if you put the liens on, he can't get away with it, but it doesn't sell his properties right away. Secondly, on Jeff Yass, there's a great point by Jordan. And here goes the ass queen again. Because remember, he's the guy who owns 15% of TikTok. And that's why Donald Trump switched his position on TikTok. Because it turns out Yaz was going to try to funnel him a gigantic amount of money that not for his campaign, that he could put in his pocket through the SPAC. Okay, now the last thing on the SPAC, the company, the Trump media play. Yeah, sure. I was one, and Jordan, you solved that for me. Because I was like, look, there's only one problem with this stock, which is why would anybody that's an investor put up money up front? No, like they already have a category for this type of stock. You know what it's called? It's the greater fool theory. Like that's why banks, you know, to answer Trey's question, why would banks value it at this money? Well, they're using the greater fool theory that it's going to get really overinflated in the beginning because people are going to buy thinking there are greater fools than me. And they'll buy it at an even higher price, and then I'll dump, right? But the whole thing is predicated on everyone dumping the stock. And the only person who loses in that scenario is that shareholder. But if that shareholder that put the original investment in is Jeff Yaz, and what he's getting in return is not shutting down TikTok, and he has a ton more money in TikTok, now it all makes sense. So Yaz will probably lose money on this. Trump will come out, you know, even he probably won't make money, but he didn't put any money in. But everyone who buys the stock, my guess, and it's an educated guess, is that almost everyone who buys the stock will lose, and that's how this will play out. All right, we got to take a quick break here. When we come back, we've got more news on Republican shenanigans, as the kids say. They don't really say that. We'll be back. TYT, Jank, Jordan, and Trey with you guys, but also Andrew K, Embedded Dude, Lady D, Tate Demaray, and Scylla. They all hit the join button because they're American heroes and they produce this show along with us. So thank you for allowing this show to happen. And speaking of which, Benjamin Webster and Jarrett Williams both gifted a membership on YouTube, thereby also becoming American heroes. All right, Jordan, what's next?
Take a look at this.
A resolution to formally ban Trump from spending RNC money on legal fees never saw a vote. Republicans instead take Trump at his word.
The Trump campaign has confirmed that indeed they have no plans to spend any RNC dollars on it and will not do it. And we appreciate that very much.
Oh, they absolutely will do it. A newly minted joint fundraising agreement between the RNC and Trump's campaign funnels money to Trump's legal bills before the RNC even gets a cut. And wait until you see the flip-flopping from Trump's team on this one. But first, some more details about this deal. This was discovered after the Associated Press obtained an invite to a high-dollar donor event in Palm Beach, Florida on April 6th. The fine print explains, donations to the Trump 47 committee will first be used to give the maximum amount allowed under federal law to Trump's campaign. Anything left over from the donation next goes to a maximum contribution to Save America. And then anything left from there goes to the RNC and then to state political parties. And some context on that PAC, Save America. According to campaign finance disclosures, Save America spent 85% of its operating expenses on legal activities during the first 2 months of this year, totaling $8.5 million already. And that PAC has been used as the main vehicle for paying Trump's mounting legal bills. It has spent more than $72.5 million on legal expenses since January 1st, 2021, federal election records show. Now, with Trump's daughter-in-law, Laura Trump, in control of the RNC, maybe it shouldn't come as a surprise, but here's what the Trump family was telling top Republicans before they took over. They insisted RNC funds wouldn't be used to cover his legal bills. Oops. And for reasons unknown, it seems like the party believed them. Take a look at this.
But I do want to ask you one question about the former president's legal fees and whether or not a single dollar from the RNC or anyone who gives any money to the RNC, can you assure them or not, that nothing will be used for the president's the former president's legal proceedings.
Look, the president's campaign has made it perfectly clear that they are not going to ask for any of those legal funds to be coming out of the RNC. So that's a done deal.
But then, once the Trumps took over the RNC, Laura Trump began insisting this is actually what Republicans want. Take a look.
You think paying for President Trump's legal bills is something that would is of interest to Republican voters?
Absolutely. That's why you see a GoFundMe get started. That's why people are furious right now and they see the attacks against him. They feel like it's an attack not just on Donald Trump, but on this country.
This comes at a time where the RNC is facing a major cash crunch. In 2023, Trump's re-election campaign raised 62.5% less money from small dollar donors than it did in 2019, the year before the last presidential election. In January of this year, Trump's campaign reported raising around $3 million from small dollar donors, according to data from Open Secrets. That may sound like a lot of money, but consider that Biden's political operation raised nearly $2 million in just one day, February 29th. According to a campaign spokesman for the president. Cenk and Trey, I'm curious, how do you feel? Can you believe that the Trump family lied about the funds?
Come on, guys. I mean, look, I probably address MAGA too often, but if you're MAGA, did you really think that they weren't gonna touch the money for legal bills? Did you? You're so cute if you believe that. So there's there's two different parts of this story, and the second half might surprise you. As always, fairest show in America, okay? So the first part is they're flip-flopping on we're gonna touch the money, not gonna touch the money. So in the beginning, Larry Trump accidentally says, or says on purpose, whatever, she probably still has to court Donald Trump to move up. He doesn't care about any other human being. Anyways, she says, oh, we're gonna take all the money, right? And now, why did they bother to say that they weren't gonna take the money for legal bills? Because at that point, Larry Trump is running for co-chair of the RNC, and the RNC is supposed to give money to Trump, but to all other Republican politicians as well. So when the other Republican politicians heard Trump's gonna take all the money and use it for his personal reasons on legal fees that aren't necessarily even connected to his campaign, let alone their campaigns, they're like, no. Then we're not voting for them, okay? Then we don't want them. So that's why they had to come out and be like, oh no, that money is sacrosanct. We wouldn't touch a dollar of that money. And they're like, did we win? It's totally over, they can't reverse it. Yeah, we're taking the money, don't be crazy. Of course we're taking the money, of course. I told you when they said they wouldn't take the money that of course they're gonna take the money. Okay, now the surprising second part. The way they're doing it, it's actually perfectly legal and it's okay. Because remember, they're not taking our money. They're going to MAGA guys and Trump supporters, etc. And they're saying, now if you give money, the first part's gonna go to Trump's campaign. The second part's gonna go to his legal bills. And then if anything's left over, we'll give it to the other schmucks in the Republican Party. As long as they're clear about it and people understand that and give accordingly, that's perfectly acceptable. They could totally do that. Trey, what do you think?
I mean, I think it's just one of those things. It's like you forget how crazy things are sometimes. So you take a step back and remind yourself that like what we're talking about is, you know, Republican fundraising dollars in a campaign or in an election year going to fund the myriad legal defenses of the Republican nominee. Like it's crazy. The 88 or whatever it is, felony charges, that's what their money's gonna be used for. And that's the world we all live in. It's what you have to remind yourself sometimes that like that's wild. It's a wild reality that we live in. But I do think it's fun. You know, look, I'm all for it. I hope he uses every last cent of the Republicans' money on his hopefully ill-fated legal expense or legal campaigns. Even if that's not how it ends up going, still any money taken away from them is fine with me. I mean, the thing is, it's not like they didn't see this coming. Like, you know, that famous Lindsey Graham quote from back in 2016 or whatever, where he said like, if we end up nominating Donald Trump, it will destroy this party and we will deserve it, you know? And it's like, it's been a long, slow death and they're not quite fully on life support yet, but it's been heading in that direction ever since. And, you know, I think it couldn't happen to a nicer party. That's what I think. So bring it on, man. Yeah. But also I can't imagine going on like the news with a straight face. I know Fox News doesn't really count, but either way, any kind of news with a straight face and saying something like, well, listen, Donald Trump looked me right in the eye and said he wouldn't take any of that money. And I don't think he would lie to me. So I feel pretty good about it. He just makes everyone around him look so stupid too, publicly and overtly all the time. So it's something else.
No, I can sense part of me poor MAGA. They laughed along with us. I mean, no, yeah. I mean, even they wouldn't believe Trump if he said, "Oh no, give me your money, I'll give it back to you tomorrow."
Right.
Yeah. It's not a person in America who would believe that. Go ahead, Jordan.
To Trey's point, and there's part of me that wonders if they know they sound like idiots when they say that. They know deep down, like, I can't trust this guy, but I can't go against him because he runs our party and his daughter-in-law runs the RNC now. It's just, it's a party full of cowards who are acting like, okay, yeah, this guy is trustworthy. He has integrity. We can believe in him. We can look up to him. At the same time, they just admit to themselves quietly internally, I think this guy is just destroying everything, but they can't do anything. They're all scared of him. They're powerless. And to some extent, he's a fundraising machine, but when small dollar donors are turning on them or not showing up anymore, and even high dollar donors are getting skeptical, they're in this impossible situation where they can't go against him, but they can't speak out. They have no recourse. I'm with you, Trey. I hope he just continues siphoning money to enrich his lawyers, to pay off all these legal bills, and they just run out of money come November. That's the best case scenario, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Again, to reiterate, we're all rooting for you all to send him money so that he spends it all on his legal bills and the rest of the Republicans have no money left at all. And he can do it. There's nothing where other candidates do it. It's like to use some of the money to settle legal bills. This is very strange because usually it's about the campaign. In this case, it's not only not about the campaign, it's about not just civil payments, but he's got criminal cases. So that's the unique part. But you're allowed to send him money and he's allowed to take it as long as he's being clear about where the money's going. But Jordan is right to point out that the small dollar donations going down that much is a huge warning sign for Republicans. That's actually the thing they should be concerned about, because that means he doesn't quite have the populist energy that he had back then. And look, this race is amazing because here you've got two candidates who, in my opinion, are in a slugfest trying as hard as they possibly can to lose. And so we're gonna find out who's better at losing, Joe Biden or Donald Trump. And you know, I think Biden's numbers are awful. I think he's in a world of hurt. But Donald Trump, man, he is the best in the business at one thing, and that's losing. So that's it. This is gonna be a tight race after all.
I filed the motion to vacate today, but it's more of a warning and a pink slip. I respect our conference. I paid all my dues to my conference. I'm a member in good standing, and I do not wish to inflict pain on our conference and to throw the house in chaos. But this is basically a warning, and it's time for us to go through the process, take our time, and find a new Speaker of the House that will stand with Republicans and our Republican majority instead of standing with the Democrats.
Today, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene filed a motion to oust Mike Johnson from his role as House Speaker. This comes just months after Kevin McCarthy was removed and the Republican caucus was sent into chaos. Greene is furious that today, with the help of Mike Johnson, the House passed a $1.2 trillion spending package to avert a partial government shutdown that she says is too favorable to the Democrats. The bill passed 286 to 134. With less than half the chamber's Republican majority voting yes. Here's what Greene told reporters on Capitol Hill.
Today, I filed a motion to vacate after Speaker Johnson has betrayed our conference and broken our rules. We were promised regular order. That's what our conference had started out as, with rules and promises to the American people that we would bring regular order back to Congress. Speaker Johnson has betrayed that by passing three CRs and then forcing us to pass to vote on a two-part omnibus, the second one being today. He also only gave us, we had one day basically to read 1,012 pages, breaking the 72-hour rule. This is a betrayal of the American people. This is a betrayal of Republican voters.
So it only takes one member to seek a vote to oust a speaker. And ironically, this is a rule that Mike Johnson recently said could soon be changed. Green said in her announcement that her motion to vacate was filed as more of a warning. But when asked if she would go through with forcing a vote on it, she said she would. The House would have to consider Green's motion within 2 legislative days after she is recognized. The chamber is heading for a 2-week recess, and Green told reporters she would not call up the resolution Friday, which means the clock to force a vote has not yet started. The chamber could also move to table Green's motion, effectively killing it, so it's not clear if this is actually going to go anywhere. Green was asked by reporters how the hell her plan to oust Johnson would work without once again devolving into chaos. And as you're about to see, she had no answer.
We saw one, speaker candidate after another fall short of getting the votes necessary.
Even narrower now.
You can't, how could you possibly even find someone to succeed Mike Johnson who could get the votes, keep this conference together, and not plunge this chamber into chaos?
We're going to have to do it because the country is in crisis. I'm giving my conference time. I'm being respectful to my conference, but many members in my conference agree. Even though it's uncomfortable, it's a process none of us want to go through. It has to happen.
So far, some of the most disruptive and hostile members of her caucus don't even seem interested in joining her. Matt Gaetz, who led the charge to oust Kevin McCarthy earlier this year, told Politico, "I'm not going to question her decision. I'm just not ready to support a motion to vacate." Freedom Caucus Chair Mike Good said, "I don't know anybody who cares about what Marjorie Taylor Greene says." And some Democrats have indicated they would help rescue Johnson if Republicans voted to remove him from power. Jenk and Trey, do you guys think that's the right move? Do you take what she's doing seriously? What do you make of this?
Yeah, so let me start with some of the ways that she speaks, and it's going to be relevant to the story, and then I'll get to the substance of what I think is going to happen to the Republicans. First of all, she's getting a little Washingtonized with the talk of like, oh, we passed three CRs and they didn't even follow regular order. Like, I know what that means, but a lot of folks, you lost them. CRs are continuing resolutions. So and I need to explain to you why she's mad, because she didn't do a very good job of it. They're passing these continuing resolutions, which are in essence the budget to keep the government going. And in order to do that, they have to compromise with the Democrats to some degree. But the fact that they won the House means that and the fact that they're so stubborn usually gets them way better deals than the Democrats get. But they got to a conclusion here and they passed it, which you have to. You have to pass something in order to keep the government going. And the really right-wing Republicans either want to shut the government down at all times or propose only their version, which has no chance of passing the Senate. It's a total waste of time. And it's a clown show, but Marjorie Taylor Greene not afraid of a clown show. So now on the other things that she said, I think that a lot of the press is getting her quote wrong. They're saying that she said that this was a warning and a pink slip. I don't think she said that. I think she said this is a warning then a pink slip, right? Rather than a pink slip. And so that means she's like, look, he's not fired today, which if she really followed through on the motion to vacate, he would be, because now only one person can call for a vote. If you call for the vote itself, well, you might be thinking that doesn't mean he's necessarily gonna lose, but the Republicans are down to only a couple of people advantage because so many of them have retired. So, and the minute they lose Marjorie Taylor Greene and a couple of other guys, the Democrats have enough votes to block the speaker. So then the Republicans won't be able to get a speaker. But we're gonna come back to the Democrats because they're very relevant to this story. One more thing about what she said. She said motion to vacate, but it sounded like motion to vacay. And I was like, ooh, that sounds good. I want to vacay. When do I make that motion? Okay, but of course, again, to explain, motion to vacate just means we have no faith in the Speaker of the House anymore. We're gonna vote on a new Speaker of the House. And that's where they run into the vote issues. But I think that Mike Johnson is probably not in trouble for number one, some faction of the Republicans are trying to change that rule and go back to needing a majority of your own party to vacate. Okay, and number two, the Democrats are very likely going to ride to the rescue, and I'll tell you why in a second, but first, Trey.
Yeah, well, I mean, one thing I used to say for years up until like recently, the past few years or so, but like when I was younger, I'd always lament the fact that we had all this infighting on the left. I said it was the thing that annoyed me the most about being on the left, is we're always at each other's throats. There's all these like purity tests, you're not left enough, and the hell with you and all this. We have trouble sticking together. And I used to always say, like, you can say what you want about the right, but they don't do that. Like, they stick together, man. They'll go, as long as you have the R by your name, they'll show up for you. It don't matter, right? Like, you literally could be charged with sexual assault or whatever. They don't care. And I'm not saying that that is, you know, a good thing. I'm just saying we could take a couple pages out of their book and be a little bit more unified. But in the past few years, especially like ever since the Kevin McCarthy thing, they're like watching them now tear themselves apart from the inside. That word keeps coming up, Schadenfreude. It just feels different now. You know, now I'm on the other side of it. I'm like all for it. Like watching them kind of go through what I feel like we've done for years. I don't mind it, because they've let the, you know, the foxes in the hen house, man. The whole party is like held hostage by its craziest faction. And, you know, the downside of that is like they're taking it over completely one by one. Anybody on the right that has any semblance of sanity left gets ousted in due time, until it's nothing but large brain marges left. And that's not good, because they've proven that they, you know, they value sticking it to the libs, or, you know, like obstructing the Democrats at all turns. They value that far above making any kind of actual progress in this country, or even keeping the country open and operating. So it's not like that's a good thing, but the chaos as it transpires over there, you know, it is at least somewhat entertaining, I guess, if also existentially terrifying. But hey, it's 2024, baby. That's just how things are.
Well, the hard, you know, right wing does think that chaos is a ladder. So that, yeah. There's that. But I got more. But go ahead, Jordan.
Yeah, the point about Democrats rushing in to save Johnson, I'm a little confused by. I mean, I'm with Trey. It's enjoyable to watch them tear themselves apart. And we saw how chaotic it was when they were trying to replace McCarthy. Why not let that happen again? Just encourage it. Let them again put on display, especially in an election year, that this is a party that can't govern. Yep. You couple both of these cycles, the McCarthy and then the Johnson cycle, with clips from Republicans on the House floor lamenting that they haven't even accomplished anything this Congress. That's like they're making ads for your 2024 cycle for you. Why are you rushing in to help Johnson? And then also, when Johnson was picked, we saw all of this oppo on his background, his regressive views, but also the guy was a major J6 supporter and election denier. He helped architect some of the big lie. Why would you want to protect him? Get him out of there. It's a win-win. So I'm questioning the logic behind rushing in to help save Johnson. It's okay. Really bizarre.
No, I have the answer for you. You ready? Two words, yep. AIPAC and Raytheon. So they want that Ukraine and Israel aid bill to pass very, very badly. I use Raytheon as just a placeholder. It's all the defense contractors who are among the most powerful lobbyists in the country. And then AIPAC has been an howitzer through the Democratic Party and threatening to, you know, primary and end the careers, cancel culture, if you will, of anyone who dares to oppose sending a maximum amount of money for Israel, even under these circumstances. So Jordan, you're absolutely right. It makes no sense to rescue the Republicans from their own disaster. But Hakeem Jeffries and the rest of the Democratic Party is thinking, yes, but if we do a coalition with the corporate Republicans, go back to the Uniparty, our corporate Democrats will be thrilled, because we all largely agree on all of this. Marjorie Taylor Greene is doing it in an unproductive way. I obviously do not agree with her proposed solutions, but she's not wrong that the Uniparty is jamming these bills through. Some of the stuff in the bills are absolutely necessary, and some of it is pork for all their donors. That is why the corporate Democrats will rescue the corporate Republicans, and together they'll continue to pass everything that the donors want. And that's how this game is played. So that's why, you know, I only half agree with Trey. I think that there needs to be more disagreement within the Democratic Party, because I don't want to agree to rule by the corporate Democrats. I don't agree with their positions. I don't want to spend more money on war crimes. And so I think that you have the correct answer is balance. You have to have enough disagreement within the party so that you're not driving out everyone who doesn't disagree with the leadership. But if you get to the level that the Republicans are at now, then yes, you're at full blown chaos. So the reason I don't agree with Marjorie Taylor Greene, other than I don't like her policies, is that the reporters there are right. Well, then, okay, what's your answer? I mean, this is the same thing I said to our side when they were trying to do force the vote. Okay, fine, you get rid of them, but you have to have a battle plan for, in your world, a really hard right winger replacing him. And that pathway does not exist. So this is, she doesn't have a plan. This is her just hogging up all the camera time, because that's also how this game is played. All right, we gotta take the break. Okay, let's take a break here. Come back, do one more story for you guys. TYT, Cenk, Jordan, and Trey with you guys. One of our members, Ulysses, wrote in, can Jordan be on the show more often? He's awesome. Well, ask and ye shall receive, as you see, a lot more often, and we agreed. So, Mrs. Yule, hats off. Good comment. I see Ulysses, Jordan, Yule. I see you. Anyway, okay, S. Conway, Monique Dawson, thank you for joining. Get a load of this. Seven Dust, thank you for gifting a membership on YouTube. Amy Hyden gifted 50. Amy, who doesn't love you? Okay, that's amazing. You're beautiful. We appreciate you. Thank you, Jordan.
Take a look at this.
Thank you so much for having us. It was an honor to co-moderate that debate. We really appreciate it. Ronna McDaniel, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Good to see you.
Former RNC chair Ronna McDaniel will be making her return to NBC News this weekend, not as a guest, but as a contributor for the network. It was announced earlier today that McDaniel, who stepped down as the chairwoman of the RNC earlier this month, would be joining NBC News as an on-air contributor. McDaniel will start in her role on Sunday with an appearance on Meet the Press with Kirsten Welker. She will sit for an interview, her first since stepping down last month. As the New York Times puts it, the hire adds a reliably conservative voice to NBC's stable of political analysts. McDaniel is also expected to provide commentary on MSNBC, NBC's left-leaning cable cousin, and a network that former President Donald J. Trump and his allies often accuse of being an arm of the Democratic Party. In addition to providing commentary for NBC News, McDaniel will also appear on NBC specifically for their campaign and election night programming. The network said that McDaniel's role represents an ongoing commitment to featuring a variety of voices who can offer firsthand insight on today's politics. Carrie Budoff Brown, who oversees NBC's political coverage, wrote in a memo, "It couldn't be a more important moment to have a voice like Ronna's on the team. McDaniel will provide an insider's perspective on national politics and the future of the Republican Party." Cenk and Trey, MSNBC, that this is the Progressive Champion Network, right? Why are they hiring a conservative?
Yes, in Washington, MSNBC is considered liberal or left wing, which I find to be hilarious, as you can tell. So let's break this down. They are correct when they say she's going to provide an insider's perspective. And boy, that'll be such a big change at MSNBC, because there's no other insider perspective there. This is going to be new. Could you hire one person with an outsider's perspective? Is that too much to ask for? And apparently the answer is yes. So why bother hiring someone that ran one of the two political parties? Wouldn't they be biased by definition? Of course. In fact, they're going to be paying her to do Republican propaganda. But then if you're thinking, wait a minute, I heard from all the people in Washington that MSNBC is so left-wing, why would they hire the head of the other party? Well, I got bad news for you. If you don't know this, an enormous percentage of MSNBC's anchors and contributors are actually Republicans. So of course, Joe Scarborough was a literal former Republican congressman and still believes everything that he believed as a Republican. He just doesn't like Donald Trump. And Nicole Wallace was literally the communications director for George W. Bush, the mouthpiece for one of the most conservative, right-wing, and awful administrations of our lifetime. Now she's now a beloved lib on MSNBC. I find all of this hilarious. And then, of course, they also have the former RNC chair, Michael Steele. So what are they all going to say on air? What executives want them to say? They're all hired to say the same exact thing, no matter where they came from. So, and Ronna McDaniel's already aligned with them, because they're not representing the left. That's only fools in Washington believe that. And unfortunately, good people in the country that don't know better and that have never watched anything but TV have been hoodwinked into thinking that that's the left. No, they represent the Uniparty. So corporate Democrats and corporate Republicans have come together in the epicenter of the establishment, which is MSNBC. And so Ronna McDaniel is, in that sense, a perfect fit there. She's gonna do the same exact thing, which is, oh, on social issues, we're good people. We don't wanna hate black people or gay people. And she'll pretend the Republicans never did, and that Trump doesn't, etc. And she'll whitewash the Republican Party. And then on anything that relates to corporate issues, she will join as every other pundit and every other anchor on MSNBC, CNN, and Fox News and say, no student debt being paid off, no higher minimum wage, no healthcare for you guys, nothing for the average American, but nothing but deregulation and corporate tax cuts. So I guess in a sense, everyone in the building at MSNBC is saying, welcome home, Ronna. Trey, what do you think?
Well, first of all, apropos of nothing, every time I see her name, it makes me want to go into a Scottish brogue, because when I was in Inverness, I met a very drunk lassie named Ronna McDonough from Nairn. And that was a fun time at the bar. And every time I see Ronna McDaniel, that's how I just want to start talking like this for some. But I used to, as I didn't see you. Anyway, I'm not going to keep doing that. It just pops into my brain every time her name comes up. I think it's funny. I've always thought it's funny. Like, she complains. It's like this lady can't even get all these slavering, wild-eyed lunatics elected to higher office. We need to get someone competent in there, you know, like a member of the Trump family. You know, it's just more evidence of them, again, seemingly willfully tearing themselves apart from the inside, which, of course, I'm all here for. As far as her getting this job, like, I agree with pretty much everything you said about it, Jake, about MSNBC and all that. I feel like her going there is just like a drop in the bucket as far as all the things that I feel are wrong with the current state of, like, you know, mainstream cable news media. So it's not like I'm surprised by it or anything. I mean, like you said, I mean, the Michael Steele had the same job. He's been over there, so. You know, I don't think anybody should be surprised by it, but I agree with your takes on it, though. But yeah, Ronna McDaniel, back to you, Jordan.
we see how they treat every once in a while. They have one progressive on a panel and they'll shut them down really quick, even if they have a progressive on a panel. But I think what's really important, and when they're talking about honing their political analysis going into an election season, I think it's really important that they brought her on so they have yet another analyst to talk about why Democrats need to continue to move to the right, why it's important for the party, important for voters, important for the country. It's just so good that they're thinking clearly and logically about the need for strong liberal voices like Ronna McDaniel on the network to talk about shifting the party to the right. That's a really good thing.
Okay, a lot of sarcasm here. All right, last couple quick things on what you both said. I've been to Inverness, and so you're talking my language there, Trey. But I think of a different name every time I think Ronna McDaniel. You know what I'm going to say? I thought she was dating the Hamburglar.
Yes, right.
Right, because every time I think Ronald McDonald. Although yes. Trump does kind of have Ronald McDonald covered and might be dating the Hamburglar. Okay, so now onto the serious stuff. Look, guys, this whole thing is a mirage anyway, to Jordan's point. Corporate media is a mirage. MSNBC is a mirage. They make all of media sound like cable news is so important because everybody's watching cable news. Cable news is so representative, and the rest of the entire media ecosystem is centered around cable news. And that's why when they take off all the progressives from on air and the so-called left-wing channel hires nothing but Republicans, it's not helpful because that mirage unfortunately does work. And by the way, who did they let go of recently? Mehdi Hasan. So if you've heard me say dozens of times on the show, the one actual true progressive they had on air was Mehdi Hasan. Now he's gone and he's replaced by the head of the RNC. I mean, nothing says MSNBC more than that exchange right there. But the reason why I say it's a mirage is because, guys, at this point, barely anybody's watching cable news. And the average age of an MSNBC viewer is around 68 years old. And no disrespect to anyone who's 68 or older, but is that the majority of the country? Of course not, it's not even close. The actual programming goes to a very small number of elderly people in this country. And that's also true of CNN and Fox News. But they dominate the rest of the media. And they have an amplifier effect where everything they said is blasted out as if it's super important. And that is corporate media all working together. It's not a memo, it's not a conspiracy, but it's groupthink. They all work together to push out a pro-corporate message from the Uniparty. And so corporate Republicans and corporate Democrats are almost all of cable news, no matter where they are. And the whole point of that is to trick you into voting for corporate agenda, which is mainly a right-wing agenda. That's why MSNBC is now filled to the rim with former Republicans who are pushing right-wing propaganda, pretending to be left-wingers. That's good cop, bad cop, and how you get robbed blind. Okay, we gotta go. Trey, you're awesome, thank you. You too, Jordan. Everybody check out Insurgents podcast for Jordan. Everybody check out Weekly Skews podcast for Trey. You guys are the best. We got a whole nother hour coming up, including Candace Owens getting fired from the Daily Wire. Whose side am I on? Candace Owens or Ben Shapiro? Let's find out when we come back.